It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we've got a very full studio in here today. We've got a very special show planned. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, you are a valued partner of the show. It's great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here, Kim. Thank you.
Do you have all of your Christmas shopping done?
Are
you going to see Steve on Christmas Eve at the mall?
I think my wife got it all done for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she does a great job. You know, it's great to have you here. And since it is the 17th, you know, there are some things that people can do between now and the end of the year regarding tax planning for the end of the year and into next year. And if they are interested in doing a discovery session with you and your team over there at Presidential, phone number is 303-694-1600. As I say to Natalie, I give her phone number out every morning. She's at the switchboard at 730-303-694-1600. And also in studio, Joshua Scharf. It's great to have you here.
Good morning, Kim.
You have written a piece in Complete Colorado about climate activists. They're demanding that PARA politicize pension investments. And we're going to be talking about that because it seems like that is not a good idea to be politicizing the retirement of teachers and employees.
It's okay to play around the edges. It's a bad idea to take these, to risk returns for somebody's game-playing political agenda.
Okay, so we're going to talk about this in segments 3 and 4. You can find this in Complete Colorado, and then if you just click on the banner ad at the top, there's all of the original content. So, and we guarantee that you will learn a lot this morning. So, first thing, Steve, have you done your Christmas shopping yet? Or are you still for sure going to wait until December 24th?
Yes, it amazes me that you ask questions that you already know the answers to.
So, yeah, I'm just going to go over to the mall on the 24th and have lunch and just watch the action that day. So
you're bound to see it.
I'm sure. So as we look at these issues, though, freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon or a policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, you don't need to force it to implement it. And as we continue to see the socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, these things, and these are things that are really make our lives better, and government just wants to get involved in them more and more. And when government gets involved, typically the supply goes down, the quality goes down, and the cost goes up. So let's continue to have a conversation about freedom, because I think most people really like freedom. Be sure and check out my website. It is kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can email me there as well at kim@kimmunson.com. So today, our inspiration / wisdom, James Madison. I didn't know he was a junior, Steve. Did you know that?
No, ma'am.
I did not know that. So
he was a junior what?
He was James Madison Jr.
Oh, okay.
I did not know that, Joshua.
Very good.
Anyway, so he was born in 1751. He died in 1836. He was an American statesman, lawyer, diplomat, philosopher, and founding father, and also the fourth president of the United States. He is hailed as the father of the Constitution for his pivotal role in drafting and promoting the Constitution of the United States and the United States Bill of Rights. So this is what he said. Wherever the real power in a government lies, there is a danger of oppression. In our governments, the real power lies in the majority of the community. And the invasion of private rights is chiefly to be apprehended, not from the acts of government contrary to the sense of its constituents, from acts in which the government is the mere instrument of the major number of constituents. I know that was pretty heavy, but for some reason I thought that was really, really important to say today. So, okay, our jokes for today. Are you ready, Steve?
Gentlemen, I ask you to be witness here witnesses here, she did say jokes.
Okay, since we're going to be talking about retirement, I found some retiree jokes. Okay, Joshua, when is a retiree's bedtime?
I don't know. When is a retiree's bedtime?
2 hours after he falls asleep on the couch.
Do you have a rim shot sound effect over there?
It's coming.
It's coming. Okay, Jason.
Yes.
Why don't retirees mind being called seniors?
I do not have the slightest idea.
Because the term comes with a 10% discount. And lastly, why are retirees so slow to clean out the basement, attic, or garage?
This one's a good one.
Okay, because they know that as soon as they do, one of their adult kids will want to store their stuff there. Okay.
I can relate to that one, and I'm not even retired yet.
I know. So, okay. Several things. Wanted to make sure that these are on your radar. And that is Hooters Restaurants can help with your holiday party. Their wings are fabulous. In fact, I'm going to have some folks over on Sunday night. I'm actually going to get their buffalo shrimp. Steve, you look like you want some.
Jason, you know where we're going to be Sunday night?
We're going to be crashing Kim's party.
Yeah. Okay, I'll get extra. And you can shop Hooters for the holiday. They have their 2020 calendars. And if you'd like to, you can actually buy one, ship those to our troops overseas. And place your catering order now for the holidays. You know, as we're coming into the holidays up until New Year's, you can always use a little bit of help. And so I would recommend that you call them regarding that as well. And be sure and check out my website because all of our sponsors are there and you can get more information about Hooters Restaurants there. Secondly, tomorrow night, we will be announcing we have 15 amazing women of the West who will be speaking at our Stand for Colorado rally. And that is January 8th. It's the first day of the legislative session, 11 o'clock on the west steps of the Capitol. And be there or be square. We need to let these legislators know that we are watching and that we care about what's going on. And Jason, actually, if you go to our website, standforcolorado.com, we've got an amazing picture of when we were doing the Pledge of Allegiance, and you are front and center on that picture.
You're trying to scare people away from the rally?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. But if they want to know what you look like, well, actually, they can
That's what I'm saying. You're going to run off people that might otherwise attend.
Well, I don't think so. But actually, if they want to know what you look like, they can also go to airpresidential.com. That's our website, airpresidential.com. That's A-I-R, presidential.com. And then another thing, January 13th, which is a Monday, 5 to 8 p.m. over at Water's Edge Winery, we will be doing our first salon series, and it's with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. It's the punches to knock down democratic socialism. And my friends, we've got to be able to argue this, or maybe debate, deliberate this with our kids, because in the public education and at our universities, socialism is being romanced. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, socialism ultimately comes down to force. But we have to be able to engage in this battle of ideas. And Helen Raleigh grew up in China, so she knows firsthand what socialism is like. And so this is going to be a really, really terrific event. And again, if you want more information on that, just email me, kim@kimmunson.com. We just about have the Eventbrite ready to go on that. So, gentlemen... I tell you what, Christy Whaley texted me yesterday morning, and she was in a dither about this paid parental leave for federal workers. And it looks like it's probably going to, I think, pass today. It says the federal government's 2.1 million employees will get paid parental leave for the first time, a galvanizing moment in the growing movement to bring the benefit to all U.S. workers. The benefit, which gives 12 weeks of paid leave to mothers and fathers of newborns, newly adopted children, or foster children, is part of a defense bill expected to receive final congressional approval today. President Trump has said he will sign it into law. The new policy aligns the federal government with many of the country's most powerful companies, which have been leading the charge in aggressively expanding parental leave benefits. It also could set a high standard for other employers, both because of the length of time offered and because the policy would apply to all new parents, not just birth mothers. It's a game changer, said Dan Sprock, director of People and Culture at Fairy God Boss, a women's career website in New York City that advocates for equality in the workplace. This is a very bad idea because it increases the cost of labor across the spectrum, and it increases the cost of labor, and it's done with our tax dollars. And so what that means is people that might be small businesses, their taxes are going to go up, they're going to have to work longer hours, and we are now paying people to that will not be working. And so this is going to be a very expensive program. You know, typically I am very supportive of President Trump because I love the fact that he's been lowering regulations, lowering taxes. I think Ivanka has really been pushing this. Mm-hmm. And I think that she certainly has his ear, but this is really a bad idea. Joshua, I think what we're going to do, and Jason, let's go to break a little bit early on this so that we have, you know, the whole time then to really talk about this, because I want to hear what you have to say about this. So this is Kim Munson. It's the Kim Munson Show. I have in studio with me Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management and Joshua Scharf, and we'll talk about your very important piece, Climate Activists Demand Parapoliticized Pension Investments. Can you believe I can say that in the morning? Okay, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Santa baby, just slip a sandal.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and it's obviously Christmas time. Love that Charlie's put together all that music for the bumper music. Okay, we're talking about this PBS article. And of course, PBS, yesterday we were talking about how much money public broadcasting receives, and $6 million here in Colorado, but it was like $132 million or something in Virginia, and the District of Columbia was like $40 million plus, wasn't it, Steve?
$122 million in Virginia.
Okay,
and really had me scratching my head.
Well, that's where one of the flagship stations is located, so they have a lot of the PBS is right in Arlington. There, they have a lot of the. I think both the TV and the radio mm-hmm. have national flagship stations located right across the Potomac from D.C. So I think that's why the Virginia number is so large.
Of course. But my point is how about I don't think the government should be paying for journalism. We're supposed to have a free press, not one that is being funded by the government.
Oh, it's a terrible idea. And this idea that this sort of thing that's starting to get traction, that the government should be subsidizing local press, is even worse.
I know. We're talking about that here. But anyway, that was really not the subject we're going to talk about, but I just had to mention it because it was by PBS. So what we're talking about here is the federal government. It looks like today it will pass the House on. And, you know, the other thing is it's part of a defense bill. You know, I am so tired of all these things getting into, you know, other bills. Let's have the defense bill. And then let's debate paid leave on this. But I am getting so frustrated the way that they are putting all these together. Steve, you look like you want to say something.
As a youngin back in the 70s, coming up through the ranks, literally, my earliest days in the Air Force, we found out our pay raise was going to be tied to something to do with a farm bill.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, all the youngins, again, standing around scratching their heads, it's like, what is the connection?
So anyway, it's going to be on a defense bill. Looks like it's going to pass the House today, and it is going to be signed by President Trump. And it is going to give parents 12 weeks of paid leave. And currently, in 1993, the Family and Medical Leave Act provided 12 weeks of unpaid leave. But now it will be paid leave. And I find this interesting in the piece. There's a woman, her name's Meredith Irby. She's 32. She's a social worker for the federal government in Little Rock, Arkansas. She said, I am so excited. The benefit will definitely make a huge difference. I already told my husband, okay, so we can have a kid in October. After unexpected complications during her pregnancy 2 years ago, she had to borrow 6 weeks of advanced leave so that she could spend time with her newborn son. That leave was finally paid back in June. So I am guessing that this paid leave will be on top of leave that people already receive. Mm-hmm. They get all the holidays off, and we will be paying people not to work, which means that their colleagues are going to have to either work more or somebody's going to have to be hired. And we're going to see this reverberate throughout our corporations. And who really gets hurt is the everyday hardworking, you know, mom and pop business out there. Joshua, what's your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think, first of all, I mean, aside from the idea that maybe it's better to, you know, if we're talking about federal bureaucrats here, maybe it's better if they're not working. But it sort of reinforces the sense, I think, that there's them and then there's the rest of us. You know, yeah. That they get this benefit, and then there's the rest of us. And by the way, I'm not arguing in any way, shape, or form that this should become a mandated benefit by law for the rest of us. I'm not arguing that at all. But that, you know, here's another federal benefit. This is already among the highest standard of living metro area in the in
the
country.
Washington, D.C.
And it's all our money. It's not like they produce anything. So that's all our money to begin with, and now they're going to get yet another benefit.
You know, and Patty had, our researcher had located or found this, that, you know, with the BLM, with the Bureau of Land Management, that is moving to Grand Junction, mm-hmm. and a number of bureaucrats are saying, no, that's not a good idea. It's a great idea to move these agencies out of Washington, D.C., and then maybe at some point we'll talk about whether or not we should have them. But anyway, moving them out is a good idea. But we found out, Jason McBride, that those that live in the Washington, D.C. area, because housing is so expensive, mm-hmm. that they get a 30% bump in their pay because of that. So here we have most of these federal workers that are in Washington, D.C. They already are getting a bump on their pay, and now they're going to have paid family leave. And the problem is it's paid for by us.
Well, and I have a couple of questions about that. One, what if a husband and wife work for the government? Do they both get 12 weeks off, or is it just the mother?
I think it might be both.
Is it both? It sounds like it's both of
it's
them.
It's both of them. You know, I read this statement by this gal that says, basically, this benefit will make a huge difference, and I told my husband, okay, so we can have a kid in October. I believe that you're woefully unprepared for the reality of having children and the long-term expense of it if you think 12 weeks worth of paid time off is going to enable you to have a child versus not having a child.
Well,
there's a lot more than 12 weeks involved.
Yeah, Joshua.
There is. However, my wife and I are fortunate in that we just had a baby back in September.
Congrats.
Aww. Yeah.
And we're very fortunate in that I work at home, and Susie also works at home. And it has made it, in all honesty, it has made a world of difference.
Right.
That we have not immediately had to, you know, go and find, you know, some sort of daycare for our son. So it is a real benefit, especially in those early months. It is a real legitimate benefit, and we don't know her specific financial situation or her specific work situation. So I don't want to be argumentative. I would just hesitate to be a little bit too judgmental on her particular situation.
No, not being judgmental, just making the point just 12 weeks of being able to have that time off to me would not push me to make the decision to have a child or not. Right. And that's how her sentence read to me. Perhaps I'm misinterpreting it, but that would not be the deal breaker maker in
that
decision.
Yeah, because children are a lot more expensive than just, 4 months or three, 12 weeks of paid leave.
Now, you got that right.
Yeah, Patty just did text me. She said it would be for both parents. Now, a couple of things. I'm truly a believer that children should be with their parents as much as possible. But one of the reasons that we have parents, I know a lot of young moms that would really love to make the decision to be home with their children. But because life is very expensive in America today, they feel that they need to work. Healthcare is really expensive. Housing is really expensive. Energy is becoming more and more expensive. And the reason is because government has their hands all over it. What we need to do is we need to lower taxes, we need to lower regulations so that people will have more freedom on whether or not they're going to work. Maybe they could have just one parent that would be working instead of two. And so instead of doing that, what this is going to do is create this huge federal program, and then you're going to see that to reverberate into your corporations. And corporations typically, Jason, could probably absorb that cost to some degree. It's still very expensive. But on the other hand, it's going to be your mom and pop businesses. Mm-hmm. We're seeing forced minimum wage. We're seeing mm-hmm. possible family leave to go help take care of Aunt Tilly in Kentucky here in Colorado. And we're seeing things that are increasing the cost of labor, and it squeezes our small businesses, Josh. Joshua.
No, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that ends up happening whenever we have this discussion, for instance, about the minimum wage here, the question that nobody asks, the question that nobody in the Denver City Council asks, is what are we doing right now that is making life more expensive for people, and maybe we should stop doing that? And nobody asks that. They want to. The next thing is going to be to get rid of any sort of oil and gas drilling in Denver, and there is some out near the airport. That's going to be the next thing is to slowly squeeze that out. And I don't know where those pipelines go. I don't know if that's going to end up affecting pipelines that go through that. But so many things that local and state and federal government do make life more expensive for the average citizen, rather than looking at what we could be doing to make it less expensive.
Right. And the other thing is there could be an unintended consequence. And that is, you could see employers look at a young woman and say, mm-hmm. she is of, I mean, nobody would ever admit this.
No.
But they might look and they say, she's of childbearing age. She just got married. You know what? We might have additional costs there. And you might mm-hmm. actually see this be detrimental to young women as they want to enter the workforce. And I'm not going to ask you men to say anything about that, because I don't want to get you guys into trouble. But quite frankly, that's something that nobody will say. But that is something that I think could be an actual unintended consequence on this. I'm going to move over to one other thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from Complete Colorado. Sherry Pife, she does such a great job. And she found this.
She has the best sources.
She does. I mean,
for quotes.
Yeah.
Well, you're trying.
Oh, are you? That's right. You're in here, aren't you? Okay. I'm a little slow on the uptake there, Joshua. Sorry about that. So, this is from Complete Colorado, and she says the regional transportation district, RTD, is still trying to fully fund an archaic and costly retirement system for some of its employees, costing taxpayers inside the 8-county RTD taxing district millions of dollars. Perhaps the bigger problem for at least one RTD board of directors member is that RTD also continues to remain the sole source of contributions into all non-union employee pension plans. The plans combined amount to more than $11 million per year in contributions funded with taxpayer money. Joshua, this is astounding in this day and age. That means that these and it's probably more your salaried. Well, it would be like your management would be my guess, is that they're not having to put any money into their pension plan.
Well, it's grandfathered in, so I think they it's for employees since 2006.
Okay.
I don't know. There may be some drivers, mechanics, people like that who have been there that long, but I don't know RTD's employment structure well enough to know who it might be.
Okay.
However, it's clearly a legacy type of a system. Nobody operates that way anymore. I mean, nobody operates on this. Nobody's creating new pensions. You have 401ks,
right.
You have defined contribution plans. Nobody's creating new pensions. And even the older pensions, the employees were always, you know, expected to put, or usually, I should say, expected to put something in. So here we are, essentially taxpayers again, fully funding the retirements of people, and they're not even expected to contribute to this.
It's astounding. Jason, what do you think about this?
Well, I think it's interesting, and I was reading Mr. Scharf's comments in the article, which are great, talking about that we've been in a declining interest rate environment. They're assuming a 7% rate of return going forward to achieve this. And I think this is an issue with a lot of pensions right now that are, quote, underfunded. Well, with the stock market and the growth in the economy, and especially the asset inflation of both stock market and other assets that pensions tend to own over the last 10, 12 years, I mean, my goodness, if they haven't caught up and become fully funded with the kind of increases in asset prices we've had over the last 10 years, is the next 10 years going to be just as good? How do they ever expect to get caught up? So I would believe a few years from now, if we get a decline in the stock market or the economy, we're going to be right back where they are now and looking for more taxpayer money to make up the difference.
Well, and as usual, what happens is if you put this high, if you put this expected high rate of, and we saw this with Para, if you have an unexpected, unsustainably high rate of return sort of built into your assumptions, you end up chasing that return, which means you end up building risk into your portfolio, which means when things go south, they are worse than they would have been if you had been more conservative in your assessments and more conservative in your investments.
That's correct. And I have one more
sitting across the table here from Mr. Investments.
That's right. And one other comment that you generally see happen a lot of times in pensions like this, you know, they'll have a stated rate of return, and as soon as the pension has a good move where maybe it becomes overfunded for a period of time, usually then you end up with the unions and the workers demanding that extra be paid out to them or be added on, because now it did more than you guys said it was going to, and so you have to pay us that extra. That's not the way it works. When you have times that are better than the average, that money needs to remain in that plan to become a cushion for when times are not as good as the expected average.
It makes a lot of sense, Jason McBride. Joshua?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that got Para here in Colorado into trouble. Once it became overfunded, there was an assumption that not only could certain short-term benefits be extended, not extended in longer term, but made larger, but then also there was a belief that long-term benefits could be made more generous as well, and now we're in a deep hole.
So when we hit a smooth road, they're saying, let's take the shock absorbers off the car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd make one more suggestion. Is if this was a book that I read a few years back, and I don't know if you've read this one, Joshua. This was a great one discussing the problem with the pension structure and what has happened with them. It's a book by a fellow named Roger Lowenstein, and the name of the book is While America Aged. And it was a really good book about, you know, why the pension system has suffered the way it has.
Now, Lowenstein's written a couple of books about the sort of financial stuff like that. That's one of them. It's an excellent account of sort of the national issue with public pensions.
Okay, well, let's go to break. I have in studio with me Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management, valued partner of the show, and Joshua Scharf, who has written this important piece. We're talking about retirement. And then what is happening is we are seeing that there's a push to have Para get out of oil and gas stocks. And Joshua has written this important piece. It was in Complete Colorado. You can find it there. And we want to talk a little bit about that, because it seems like that taking investment options off the table is not a really good idea to me, Joshua.
It's a terrible idea.
Okay, well, stay tuned. You'll find out why. This is Kim Munson.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Do you know we have homeless veterans in our area? That's why KLZ, with your help, is having a donation drive. The Axe Resource Center is requesting cleaning and toiletry items that can be found in the kitchen, bathroom, and laundry room. Drop-off locations are in Wheat Ridge, Fort Collins, and Colorado Springs. To help with this veterans donation drive and more information, visit our website, klzradio.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We have in studio with me Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, Joshua Scharf. I have the actual title here. You're the Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy at the Independence Institute.
That's a mouthful.
It is. Okay, climate activists, Joshua, demand that PARA politicize pension investments. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, we've had this a couple of times in the past, and I haven't necessarily always been, you know, opposed to it for small sort of tinkering around the edges if you want to make a statement or if there's a major policy goal. So, for instance, divesting from Iran. Was something that actually PARA came up with its own policy in order to avoid legislative action on that. Was it sort of a legitimate national security interest there that maybe we don't want to be putting money into? But it's a tiny number of investments. What these folks want to do is get PARA to divest entirely in its portfolio from companies from whom, and I think they use a couple of different metrics, but a substantial amount of their business comes from oil and gas. This is virtue signaling at its worst.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they would like to do is have PARA sell off its investments in the oil and gas industry and companies that, like I say, derive a substantial proportion of their revenue from that. And what they did was they went back and they said, well, if we had done this in 2009, which is an interesting year to pick, if we had done this in 2009... you know, here's how much farther ahead we would be. And I think they come up with a number of, you know, something like $1.7, $1.8 billion, something like that. They say that that's how far ahead we would be, how much more money we would have if we had shifted that proportionally to the rest of the portfolio. Now, that may very well be true, but it's completely irrelevant when it comes to portfolio management because you have investments in different areas to deal with different market conditions. And so, you know, what they've done basically is they said, well, you know, we'll take this high growth period, and oil and gas is never a high growth stock at this point. It's never a high growth industry. We'll take that and we'll say, well, you know, we could have done so much better here. What happens when we head into the next cyclical recession, which, you know, God willing, won't be for a little while, but what happens when it inevitably happens? Oil and gas does much better in late cycle expansions, and it's also a decent buffer against a recession. And so what they've done, if you extend the time period back farther, it turns out that they sort of deliberately picked that period of time because they cut out the time when oil and gas vastly outperformed, you know, the S&P, which happened for several years, happened for, you know, decades previous to that. So
that's pretty convenient.
What they've done, of course it is. So it's not only bad analysis, it's bad investments, and, you know, of course, we all sitting here in the room would tend to agree that it's, you know, bad policy. It's really bad when you tell a public pension whose job it is that their responsibility, their only fiduciary responsibility, is to their members. Legally, their fiduciary responsibility is to their members. It's not to the taxpayers. It's certainly not to political pressure groups to say that you now have to distort your investment portfolio in order to meet somebody's idea of virtue when it comes to where, you know, what kind of energy we should be using.
So, Jason, what do you think?
Well, you know, I find a couple of things kind of humorous about it. Josh mentioned that they picked a very specific time period to use to show that energy had underperformed, you know, maybe the S&P or certain other investments. You know, if you're going to cherry pick, then at least do it right. You know,
okay.
Energy did very, very well, you know, from the bottom of the market in 2009 up until about the middle of 2014. Mm-hmm. You know, energy didn't quite go up as much as the S&P, but it had a very strong gain. Now, since the middle of 14, up until recently, energy has had, you know, a very rough time. So I'd say two things about that. One, if you're going to cherry pick a time period to try to make a point, at least be smart enough to pick the last 5 years when it was really bad. And number two, why do you want to divest of all of the energy holdings now when the prices are down, when it's shown time and time and time again in the market that the sectors that have kind of done the worst for the last couple of years, you look a couple of years out and those are the ones that often do the best. So why do you want to get rid of it at the bottom, and where are they going to put the money?
Well, they want to obviously
the top best performing sector?
Right, of course, because, you know, you always want to buy high.
Right. Well, and one other thing that I thought was...
I say that sarcastically.
Right, right. One other thing I thought was interesting is, as we're talking about virtue signaling in the energy space, well, of course, a better choice would have been, I'm sure, to be in clean energy and green energy and solar and wind. So this is interesting, just looking at a couple of broad-based indexes.
Okay.
If we go all the way back to March 9th of 2009, when the market hit the bottom, up till pretty much yesterday, a broad-based index of energy, oil, and gas stocks has gone up about 71% during that time, while a broad-based mix of clean energy investments has gone up only 10% during the same time period. So, you know, virtue signaling is great, but when you're managing a pension, Josh, you'd probably agree it's about making money, right?
You have to take care of the members, and if you don't, then it falls back on the taxpayers. I mean, what they're trying to do is put oil and gas out of business,
mm-hmm.
and so they're trying to starve it of capital. That's their goal. And so if you can get public pensions, which are huge investors, and I wouldn't say they control in the sense that they, you know, in the sense of sort of having a control is perhaps an overstatement of the word, but they have enormous assets all over the country. If you can get those piecemeal to divest from oil and gas, then it will depress the asset price. And now it may be a buyer opportunity for somebody else, but it shrinks the market. It depresses the asset. It will starve them of capital when they need to put out a tender for more stock to raise more money. The price will be depressed, and their goal essentially is to marginalize and, like I say, starve oil and gas of capital, because what they want to do is drive oil and gas out of business. I don't know about you, it's 20 degrees outside right now. I'm very grateful for oil and gas.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're in a warm studio, I'm going to get in my warm car and drive home to my warm house. All right. And we're going to do it at a relatively affordable price. All right. I mean, you know, you just read the numbers. Clean energy is just not going to do it. And, you know, quote unquote, clean energy is just not going to do it. And again, these are people who want to put pressure on the government to do things to make life more expensive for everybody else.
You know, and Joshua, they don't give up. I remember this was, I want to say it was 4 or 5 years ago, where there was a movement, and I went up and I actually made public comments at the CU region Board of Regents meeting, because there was a group of people that wanted CU to divest of fossil fuels. So it's amazing. They don't give up. I mean, they continue to come around. But just think about this, okay, my friends, okay, you know, you're out there. I mean, mom and pop businesses, I mean, a vibrant middle class is so important to the American idea. And a lot of people are out there not working 40 hours a week. They're working a lot more. Like one of my neighbors, it's kind of a race on who leaves earlier. He starts his car, I start my car. And, you know, I bet he puts in 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a small business guy. And so now we have this divestment. And what you just mentioned on this, Jason, is over that 10-year period, the rate of return on this clean energy, quote unquote, clean energy portfolio. And of course, that's actually a misnomer if you really take a look at everything that's involved, but we'll use that. 10%, Joshua, we're promising, what, 7% rate of return on para? Is that what they're...
I think they're at 7.25
Seven
now.
And a quarter.
That's 10% over 10 years.
Right.
That's like 1% a year.
Right. Right. Right.
So
and that's with massive government subsidies.
Correct.
Right. So who is going to pay that rate of return to these employees if, in fact, instead of 71% return, it was 10%? Who's going to make that up, Joshua?
Well, we all know the answer to that.
Right.
I mean, listen, this is one of these things where sort of all the pieces come together in the worst possible way. Right. So if you divest from oil and gas, you drive them, out of business. That's going to take a long time to do. But you sort of make life more expensive for them. You end up laying off workers. Right. So then the next plan, and this is clearly announced, is that you and I will pay for the retraining of those workers to go work in these, quote unquote, clean energy fields or in something else. So now we're having to pay more for to heat our homes, more for our fuel. And we also have to pay to retrain people that these folks have thrown out of work. Right. At the same time, we see returns declining on public pensions. And then we have to pay more in order to make that up because these promises have been made. Right. And this is one of these situations where basically everything comes down on the middle class. And then you wonder why you have places, you know, why you have the situation you have in California. You end up the people making the decisions ultimately don't believe that they are going to have to live with the consequences of these decisions. The people pushing for this ultimately believe that they'll be able to afford whatever it is. It's you and I who the vast majority of your listeners and people out there who are listening to this show. Who will have to pay this out of their pockets, and it makes it harder for them to retire, makes it harder for them to send their kid to school or send their kid to college or just send the kid to play baseball this summer, right, and have a vacation or retire eventually or whatever, you know, people save to have their money for, right? It makes it harder for them to make a living. At the lower end, it makes it harder for them to hire people who are trying to get started. And this is just malign effects that just dribble down on everyone, except, of course, the people making the decisions.
Of course. So, hey, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion. I have Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management in studio. Joshua Scharf, he is a senior fellow in fiscal policy at the Independence Institute. And we're talking about this virtue signaling that actually it hurts everyday hardworking people. And we need to get our brains around these issues, and then we need to say no. So let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. And we have in studio Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, and Joshua Scharf, who is the Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy at the Independence Institute. And we're talking about the climate activists that are wanting to politicize PARA's pension investments. They are asking that PARA get out of all oil and gas stocks. And Jason, what's your thought on this?
Well, while you guys are good, you probably missed the headline. I just saw it on my phone. All the problems are solved at Para.
Oh.
Yeah, they just hired Times Person of the Year, Greta Thunberg, who's going to be the new consultant to Para to invest in and manage all of the clean energy investments in the fund, starting with sailboats.
Oh, boy. I tell you, you know, I can, it seems like that they're, I just think of the mom and pop people out there that are just trying to keep their businesses going. And you've got these bureaucrats and politicians and interested parties that they are putting forth their virtue signaling, and who's going to pay for it? It's us. And ultimately, Joshua, this, I think this is going to, it could ruin our state financially as we're looking at something like this.
Well, combining this with the so-called clean, or the so-called green energy plan that they want here in Colorado, I mean, that, I think there was an estimate that came out recently that could cost the state, not the country, the state, over you know, the next few decades, something like $1 trillion. I mean, and that's not the state budget. I mean, that's the state economy. That's an enormous sum of money that you're talking about taking from something that's nice and clean. I mean, listen, I'm old enough to remember, we're all here old enough to remember when natural gas was the clean alternative to oil. Now they don't like natural gas either because it doesn't provide the control. This is, and ultimately, all this is going to do is drive people out of the state. This is a gorgeous state. People move here because it's a beautiful place. That's why I moved here. I moved here almost 23 years ago because it's a beautiful place. But if you make it impossible for people to raise their families, make it impossible for people to live, they're going to leave. And you're going to end up, you know, you're going to end up looking like, you know, you're going to end up with you know, income distributions that look like third world countries, which is what you're seeing in California.
Right. You know, Jason, these PBIs are always wringing their hands about affordable housing and congestion on our highways. I did not realize that this was their plan to relieve congestion and bring the prices of homes down. And you do that by actually decimating the economy.
Well, you run people out of the state. You know, Joshua, you make a point that got me thinking. Colorado is a beautiful state. But, you know, America as a whole is a beautiful country, especially compared to some other places in the world that aren't so great. And it always strikes me as interesting that whenever we start talking about this virtue signaling about the climate and all that, that somehow they're always shaking their finger at America. It's always that this is all going on and the pollution's so bad and we have climate change, and then all the fingers point right towards the USA when we're one of the cleanest and most beautiful countries on the face of the planet, and the ones pointing the fingers are often the biggest polluters. So why is it always our fault? I think it's popular to blame the USA for just about everything.
Now, ironically, you know, we're the ones who pulled out of the quote-unquote Paris Climate Agreement, not the Paris Peace Accords, as Biden would have had it, the Paris Climate Agreement, and yet we're the only country that's beating the targets. And we're doing it without the government, you know, without the government forcing that to happen, because companies themselves are taking this on. The other countries who've remained part of this are not meeting. The EU can't meet these targets. We're meeting these targets.
Well, I say we should rename it the United States Accord, and we should set the targets that other countries have to meet what we're doing. And once we do, then we can talk to them about doing some other things. What do you think about that, Joshua? The USA Accord, would that ever fly?
Probably not.
Joshua, so people look at me and they say, why would we want to do this? And I heard you say it, and it's about power and control. And I think Steve had found a meme that had a sign that said, "Welcome to California, where we force you to drive electric cars, and then we turn the electricity off." So if people can't move around, then they can't go after their hopes and dreams. They can't pursue their life, liberty, and happiness. And one has to ask, I mean, I think that is such a noble thing, is for people to be able to, you know, go after their hopes and dreams. But for some reason, there are some folks that I don't think believe that.
People love their cars. You know, this is kind of a tangential. It's a related but tangential issue. And the reason people love their cars is because it gives them the freedom to go where they want to go, when they want to go. They don't have to plan their lives around a bus route. Right now, for some people, the bus is very convenient, and for other people, it's simply the best way to go. And I'm all in favor of having a robust bus system. I think is a good thing to have. But people love their cars. They say, well, if we make traffic, and you hear people saying this, well, you know, if we make traffic bad enough, it'll get people out of their cars. Here's the deal. No, it won't. People will suffer through incredible amounts of torture in traffic because they like the privacy and the convenience of having their own car. And now, you know, of course, you can talk on the phone in your car, and the things that you can stream through, you know, on your phone that you can then stream through the mm-hmm. you know, the stereo system in your car. I mean, people love their cars. You're not going to get people out of their cars, and you shouldn't want to get people out of their cars.
But they do. They do. I actually went down to the Air Quality Control Commission to testify regarding these new rules and regulations from the executive orders. Just a quick note on that. Last week we had Matthew Groves on with the Colorado mm-hmm. Automobile Dealers Association. And I typically try to not be too snarky. But in this case, you know, you had the on the impeachment hearings, they were trying to make Trump seem like he was a king. And that seemed like that was all orchestrated. Because you had Professor Carlin talk about it, the question was set up. And, you know, we had Governor Hickenlooper and Governor Polis both issue executive orders basically attempting to force people, you know, out of their internal combustion engines. And so we did a Facebook post, and we put a little crown on Polis, and we said something about these king-like decisions. And Facebook denied our ad.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah, can you believe that? So, but anyway, it's about power and control. And my friend Helen Raleigh, you know, we're going to be doing this great event on January 13th, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. She said the difference between a free society and a non-free society is a free society, people can go where they want to, when they want to. A non-free society is you are dependent on, you know, government things like buses and trains and bicycles and walking instead of the freedom to move around, Joshua.
Well, this idea that it's better to look like, you know, Beijing 1970 with people sort of using bicycles, that somehow that's more virtuous. You know, there's no inherent virtue in poverty. We all want people to be better off. We want the people who are poor now to be better off, to have the opportunity to make their lives better. We don't want to force people into a lower standard of living.
And that's
there's no virtue in coming home exhausted or having to go out in the having to take your bike in a driving rainstorm to go pick up medicine rather than get into a car. There's no virtue in that.
There is no virtue in that. And so, Jason, the idea that we have these climate activists that are demanding that PARA get out of oil and gas stocks. I mean, when you really think about it, this is it's mean. It's really not virtuous at all. It's really uncompassionate.
Well, I think Joshua made some very good points. It doesn't make sense fiscally. It doesn't make sense from a fiduciary standpoint. It doesn't make sense from the standpoint, as he brought up, of starving these companies of capital, which can make energy costs cheaper, thus improving the quality
of life. Well, if they starve it, it makes energy costs more expensive.
Right, right. Yeah, more expensive. If it was cheaper, it improves the quality of life for everybody. And I lost my last thought there. Sorry, Kim.
you knocked me
off track.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Hey, I just got a text from Susan. She said, without all the bus taxes, people would have money to travel in Uber and Lyft.
Well, maybe not. I mean, there is something interesting, though. You know, RTD is funded to the tune, something like 75 to 80% of each ride is funded, is subsidized
exactly.
by taxes.
Right.
That's overwhelmingly by sales taxes, which it's exclusively by sales taxes. Which is in general a regressive tax. Even once you take food out of the mix or clothing, the things that are exempted, it still ends up being a regressive tax, which means that the people who are paying for this are people at the lower end of the income scale.
Well, and
increasingly, the people who are taking RTD are people in the middle and proportionately are people in the middle and upper end.
Well, and, you know, if something is a good idea, then you shouldn't have to subsidize it or force people. And the idea that 70 to 80% of the actual cost of a ride is being subsidized just doesn't make sense to me. The other thing is, and I think we'll talk about this maybe next month, and I think we hit on it, but this state legislature, just this last legislative session, is putting an additional fee, not a tax, so we don't have to vote on it, for people that use their vehicles for commercial
commercial purposes.
So that would be your Uber, your Lyft. And I have a lot of friends that are now, you know, making their lives better because they can work when they want to and mm-hmm. augment their income. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People are going to have to pay a fee for that. And that's what this legislature did. And it makes me so mad. So we're out of time. But on this, Jason McBride, it's always great to have you in studio.
Oh, I appreciate it so much, and it's nice to meet you in person, Joshua.
Likewise.
And Joshua, it's great, and congratulations on your new little son. That's just really awesome. So today, let's see, here is my quote, and it is James Madison. He says, in a society under the forms of which the stronger faction can readily unite and oppress the weaker, anarchy may as truly be said to reign as in a state of nature. And I was thinking about all these federal workers and all that. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you and God bless America.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.